You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina.
The voice of Chris Smith.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Increasing clouds across the area this weekend. High temperatures in the mid to upper 80s. Overnight lows in the mid 60s. Then by Monday, a chance of showers, maybe some thunderstorms, with a high near 82. Chance of showers and thunderstorms for Monday night, a low going down to around 66. More showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
When systems fail, where do you turn for truth and resilience? Welcome to the Resilience Realm with host Dawn Westmoreland, Air Force veteran, author, and resilience advocate. Each week, Dawn brings powerful voices, attorneys, mental health experts, veterans, and leaders sharing courage, boundaries, and real-world resilience strategies. Broadcast on the Pacifica Network and WPVM-FM and featured on over 100 radio, TV, and podcast platforms nationwide. This isn't just a show. It's a movement for courage, ethics, and justice. Tune in Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern or listen anytime online. Visit DawnMarieWestmoreland.com.
Welcome back, everyone. And if it's your first time, hey, welcome. Today, I am going to talk about different instances of resilience because that's what the show is about. And if you did not know my past, I'll give a quick version. I got the T-shirt for sexual abuse, sexual harassment, especially in the Air Force, especially as a child. I was bullied as a child because I was an extreme introvert with no confidence, absolutely, totally insecure. Went into the Air Force, had what a psychologist called two bumps in the road, where I was forced to do things against my will. And then placed on 80 hours a week work just to punish myself. I've been somebody who's spoken up in the Air Force. I've had death threats for reporting a bad acting person who was a high enlisted leader. Back in 2012, I spoke up against hiring practice with second largest federal agency in the U.S. And I got big time backlash, which caused me great harm to my health and well-being. I spent 3 days in the hospital, lost my home because my paycheck was cut off as punishment, and I ended up selling about 80% of my possessions. Moving forward, I also had a bad car accident that gave me a traumatic brain injury back in 2019, back in March. And believe it or not, the trial, I thought I had all the evidence together, but the judge did not accept the statute that governs the nervous system can be addressed by a chiropractor. So I lost, and I lost big time. So all of this, I had to process. You know, it's not like, hey, it happens, let it go, it's the Christian thing, or hey, let it go because it's too heavy. You know, you do have to process grief and trauma. And when you do that in a healthy way, you can get through just about anything. So let me share with you this past week what has happened. Three people have chased me down that knew me. As they chased me down in the hallway, two of them were being bullied in the workplace. So I'm going to talk about that first, about resilience. Oftentimes when you're in the workplace, and I know this, I've been an HR person 33 years, and I've been bullied in the workplace, horrifically bullied and discriminated against. And back in 2012, I did not sign a non-disclosure agreement when I settled with the Veteran Affairs, so I could talk about it. And also, I hired a coach after that, so the so-called coach. We thought he was a coach. He was not a coach. He was abroad. He had fabricated a bunch of weave of lies. So he ended up taking quite a bit of money from me, and he put me with a PR agent in New York City that I later discovered by researching her that she had gone bankrupt at the time, or filed bankrupt at the time that I'd reached out to her for this guy's advice. So I know I've had my share of crap, BS, and drama. So how do you handle, let's jump right in. How do you handle when you're being bullied in the workplace? I must get into, there's a difference between being bullied in the workplace and discriminated against. In the United States, as of right now, there are no laws at all, although there are people out there, great people out there advocating for it, but there is nothing out there that says bullying in the workplace is illegal. So people get away with it if you don't know how to address it and handle it. I often say this, and I'll say it up front before we really get dive deep into how to handle things like this, you know, how to be more resilient in your life. It is not weak at all to leave a toxic work environment. It's powerful if you do. But if you need to stay in the workplace, it could be because of health insurance, life insurance, you know, any kind of benefits. It could be the paycheck, you know. Listeners out there, I know that some of you are taking care of loved ones. You have families, you have partners, you're married, and they might be depending on you. So I'll talk about the first person who came to me about being bullied in the workplace. The supervisor kind of was, well, I say kind of, was back and forth, passive and aggressive behavior toward this person. And had she done anything illegal? Well, I'm an HR person. I can only give you HR advice. I don't give legal advice. If you need advice on the workplace, you may want to reach out to an employment attorney because they handle discrimination in the workplace. So I found out there was actually two people being bullied by this person. So here's the advice that I gave, okay? You know, you want to document. I talk about this a million times. Seriously, folks, a million times it feels like since 2012 I've addressed it. You want to document it. You can sure write down notes, what was said, time, date, and stuff like that. But here's the thing. It's a he said, she said, because one of the people told me, I'm going to just reach out to our HR person, which is outside of the actual facility where she worked at. Well, guess what? I worked in employee labor relations, and I know this for sure. That person may be being bullied or discriminated against, but if they cannot provide any evidence, then again, it goes back to he said, she said, and oftentimes it gets dismissed. So what I recommended to this person is to document it through an email. You know, email this person, the supervisor, and tell them that whatever they did, and keep it very brief, very objective, whatever they did, yelled at them in front of people. I'll use that one, for example, is unacceptable, that you're there to be a team member, you know, that you're happy to be part of the team and such. But with them yelling at you, that is harming your well-being. It could be your mental health. And that's another subject, mental health, and that they need to cease immediately. If not, you're going to elevate it. Now, that person may not respond back. Oftentimes they don't. But here's the fact. If you have that email, you can print it out. If you're at the workplace, please don't email at home. Because somebody's monitoring your work computer. And if they see that you're emailing things home, which often people do that, they send it to their home address or home email account, whatever. And then somebody could get fired right away without you building the confidence. I mean, the confidence and competence of documentation. So always print it out, send it, print it out. If that person responds back, great. Hopefully they knock it off or apologize or at least acknowledge your email. But what if they don't? You know what? It really doesn't matter. Take that email, take it home. Always keep things at home. Never, never, never in your desk at work. Keep a chronological file of the things that are going on in the workplace, documentation, because should you get fired down the road, here's the thing. You may qualify for unemployment because usually you pay 3% of your paycheck toward it, and the organization also pays about that much too. So you've earned it. I mean, it's not a gift, it's not a freebie, but you can be challenged. So what happens is somebody from the Employment Security Commission is like a mediator, and they get on the phone. It's a three-way call. You get your turn to talk about what happened, why you filed for unemployment. The other person does too. Well, the person who has the most credibility is likely to win. So if you say, I have all these emails where I reached out to my supervisor and I could provide this, you know, you probably have a better chance. Even if that person, that supervisor never responded back, you still sent them an email and they chose not to respond back. So that's one way that you can stand up for yourself. Now, I had somebody reach out to me. They were having issues in a nursing home, and they had a family member, a father in the nursing home. And they asked me, what can I do? I just don't feel like everything's being done to properly care for, you know, my father. I see things that I consider neglect, and I feel helpless. I feel like there's no one to turn to. I've addressed it to the nurses. I've addressed it to the director. Well, here was my advice. Okay, it's the same thing. It's the same kind of documenting. It's the same kind of thing that you're going to do it for. Okay, so you've already met with maybe the social worker, the nurses, the director of the facility, the nursing home. And if you haven't gotten satisfaction to where you feel that your loved one is safe and sound, then the next thing to do is the email trail. And you'll always hear me talk about the email trail and how important documentation is. And that documentation alone, I'll say this 100 times again, is why I was able to settle with the Veteran Affairs back in 2012 without signing any kind of gag order, non-disclosure agreement. It was nothing but documentation, no witnesses or such. Oftentimes people think we need witnesses, but hey, witnesses do get scared. And they can also be retaliated against, or they could be fired too. And if you have a family and you need that paycheck, those health insurance benefits, you may be reluctant to help a person even if you want to help them. So what I recommended to this person was get a hold of the director's email. Oftentimes, I've noticed this, nursing homes, facilities, they don't want to give out emails because they want you to do everything in person. But if you do it in person, guess what? It's a he said, she said, if you cannot carry forth documentation. So again, you know, you can reach out to an attorney for guidance. I can only give you HR advice, life coaching advice, and such. But I can say this, because I know for a fact, is that there are different states that allow you to record people. And that it may be where only one person has to consent. Okay, and that could be yourself. It's all over on legal websites that you can do that here in North Carolina. So, you know, check always with a credible attorney. I can't give legal advice, but here's the catch. What if there is some kind of policy in the nursing home where you cannot record somebody? They can do that. They can certainly do that. Then what happens if you record it and move forward? And maybe you didn't even know that you couldn't record. Well, guess what? There's the possibility of being banned from the facility. There's a possibility of litigation. So I always recommend that you check and find out what the policies are for visitors and also the residents too of a nursing home. So that's my advice as an HR person. Again, I'll wrap it up and say, I never give legal advice. You know, do your own research. There's a lot of good information out there, but always go to a credible professional legal attorney's website. A lot of times they'll put in there that, you know, for example, I learned in Michigan, nobody can record anybody. But yet North Carolina, you go to the website, oh, you can record it. And only one has to agree, and that could be you. So that's a really great way to move forward. Well, what would you do with that information? So you reach out to the director by email and you say, hey, I have talked to so-and-so on this date, this time, briefly describe, very, very, very briefly describe. We're not getting anywhere. I need to know what you're going to do at this time. Because, yeah, you know what, you can call your DSS, you know, for elder abuse in your county, in your state. But you know what, they're going to need some kind of evidence of what you've done, you know, or they're going to need facts on maybe there's some problems or faults or neglect with your loved one. So you write that email, and then, you know, you ask for what I like to call a fair remedy. That's a common thing that I use quite often. Ask for a fair remedy and state that and ask for it to be given back in the email. Because oftentimes, here's what happens, folks, and I'm not picking on nursing home. I just happened to be somebody reached out to me about a nursing home recently. So here's the facts. If you don't have it in writing or you don't have a witness that would come forward, you may not have any credible evidence to move forth. So always, 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 always keep it in email. So let's pretend that the director comes back and he sees you in the hallway or she sees you in the hallway, right? Oh, you know, I saw your email. I'll give it to you in a week or I'll give it to you in a couple of days. And, you know, maybe that happens or doesn't happen. Here's what I like to do with a follow-up email. Hey, Tim, it was good. Hey, John. Hey, Joan. Hey, Barbara. It was good to see you today. It's very good to see you today. And you said you were going to give me a copy of the rules, policies for residents, you know, in the nursing home or, for visitors coming in. And thank you for offering to give me that, you know, or thank you, or you haven't given to me, it's been a week. And the reason why you do that is just to kind of capture some documentation of what's going on. Should you have to move forward to an attorney, hopefully not, or to DSS, or, you know, in North Carolina, we have the North Carolina DOJ, Department of Justice, that handles facilities that take Medicaid. Now, Medicaid in a nursing home is usually long-term, you know, Medicaid, and that's a whole different program. But a lot of nursing homes have rehabs, and they almost all of them take, you know, Medicaid. That's been my experience. So, yeah, those are options you can go to. So that's why it's so very important to have documentation, to have credible information to move forward with wherever you're going. And hopefully it's enough that you don't have to move forward when you're polite, you're professional, and you're asking for something reasonable. Now, here's where people make mistakes. They get upset. I've seen them explode, but, you know, I've seen people in nursing homes explode. I mean, I have my own mom's in a nursing home, for example. And I know I watched a man come in one evening, and this is last year. He walked in and he was madder than, he was just like a hot, wet mess. I mean, he was angry and mad because somebody had parked in the handicap spot and coming indoors, and instead of calmly saying, hey, somebody's car is parked right in the way and I've got a handicapped person I'm trying to bring in a wheelchair, he just went off on everybody. And of course, that sets the tone for, oh my gosh, you know, do we have to call the police? Is this person going to get violent? And that's the same with people. When you have a loved one in a nursing home, you don't want to explode at the staff. You don't want to get nasty. In fact, it's always better to take the high road. I strongly believe in being kind. You can be kind and you can still be professional and you can still get the job done. And if that job is, you know, addressing neglect of a loved one, do it with a smile. And if you can't do it with a smile, do it without being ugly to other people, because it always will backfire on you. Okay. So I've talked about some examples. Now, two different examples. Let me bring up a third one. Okay, what if you're a parent and you have a child that is being bullied? It happens, everyone. It happens kindergarten. It happens, you know, elementary, middle school, high school. It happens even in college. What would you do as a parent when a child really doesn't have the resources or the tools? Well, they have resources, but they're usually not taken as serious as an angry mother, an angry father, or concerned mother. Okay, your child comes home and maybe he's got a cut on him and he said, Billy pushed him in the ground. And all these names that I'm bringing forth, I'm making them all up. And And then you ask your child, well, what did you do? And he said, well, I told him to stop, and he kept pushing me around. And let's say this happens more than a couple times, and it becomes a problem, not just a one-time problem. So what do? Okay, well, you can meet with the principal, and many, many people do that, sometimes on the phone, sometimes in person. But here's the thing. It's a he said, she said. My guidance, my advice, you know, just being, again, an HR person for 33 years is if you meet in person or talk on the phone, you do a follow-up email to that principal, and you basically conclude with, appreciate you spending the time with me yesterday at our meeting to cover XYZ, whatever it is, Billy being hit, you know, continuous bullying by Bobby, for example. And you do that because it's capturing what happened, it's documentation, whether or not that principal responds back or assistant principal, if they step in, you still have proof, because you may have to go above the principal to the school board. Okay. So if you go to the school board and you don't have any evidence, documentation, email trails, any kind of proof, what can they do? Think about it for a second. What can they do? It's a he said, she said. And they might believe you, and you may sound very credible and such, but what can they do if you don't have proof that you reached out? By reaching out to the, whether it's a director, whether it's a principal, saying, thank you for talking to me today or meeting with me today, you have that email. And it's probably going to be proof that, you know, on the schedule that the two of you met. So when you have good evidence, that's how you stay resilient for yourself and also for others when they are involved. So let me wrap it up with this. In today's world, it's so very, very divided. I think customer service has really changed. It's not just a young person, you know, not being good with customer service. I mean, oftentimes people want to fault our youth, but I've met some of the greatest younger people than myself. And of course, I'm getting older, and so there's more younger people than myself. But yeah, times have changed, and it seems to be more acceptable that people mistreat you. Okay. But how do you stand up for yourself? How do you stand up for yourself? Let's say it's a family member, and it's often a family member that, you know, it's their way or the highway, or they're used to getting their way, or they're very aggressive, passive aggressive, or they may have some, you know, stronger mental health issues going on. How do you deal with them? I know somebody reached out to me about a few months ago, wants so very much to get along with the loved ones. And I could relate. I mean, I was like hearing my own story of my own family, which I come from a very, very dysfunctional family. On both sides of my family, there are a lot of mental health issues. And I don't say that in a judgmental way. It's just is. There is a lot of the men in our family, and there's some women, but suffer from major depression, some anxiety. And instead of getting help, some of them won't take medicine, won't get counseling. So what I recommended to this person, I'll call her Sue, and that's not a real name. What I recommended to Sue is this. You're going to have to set boundaries. Okay, just because that's your family member, it's your sister, your brother, your mother, your father, your aunt, your uncle, doesn't mean you have to put up with disrespect. Sometimes you have to distance yourself from people who cannot be respectful to you. And the truth is this, and I'm no mental health professional, but I've had enough mental health professionals on my radio show and mental health advice given to me to know this, that you can still love somebody, but have healthy boundaries. And if you don't know what a boundary it is, it's as simple as this. You know, I'm going to make this name up, Scott. you send an email or a text, or if you can say it in person, on the phone, in person, whatever, until you can be more respectful of me and not do the following, some of the things that they do, you know, I am not going to be communicating with you anymore unless there's, you know, a life emergency where it involves our family members, somebody, a death or something like that. When you can learn, when you can treat me, I just want to say learn, when you treat me with civility and decency or respect, you know, I'm happy to come back into your life. Till then, I am going to wish you the best. This is my own thing. I always say, I love you and I wish you the very best, but you are out of my life until you can act better around me. Now, that really, really aggravates some people, because if they're not used to people standing up to them, if they're not people, you know, that have set boundaries before with them, it freaks them out, because they love, some of them just love. And I have a family member like this, loves to start fights. He loves to just be the beginner to aggravate people. He enjoys it. Why? I don't know. You know, I have no idea why people enjoy aggravating people. I think it's just downright nasty and mean. And I've had to give them, you know, I've had to give some of my own family members, close family member and extended family members, I've had to give them boundaries. You know, you're not going to contact me anymore or communicate with me anymore unless it's a life and death issue. I've even had to, I don't say it as a threat, let them know I'm documenting all the horrible texts that they have sent me. And if it continues where they've defamed me, they've made up lies and they've called me names and made up stories that were in their head, you know, that I would contact an attorney with all the documentation. Well, that does work. It first angered some of my family members, and it's sad because you really, you know, if you're a loving, peaceful person, and I mean, I want us all to win. I want everybody to win in life and to be happy. I mean, people say life is too short not to, you know, enjoy life or have fun. I look at it this way. Life is too long to be anything but content or happy. So when you set boundaries with people, and sometimes you can't always do it with a boss, you know, you can try boundaries with them, but if they continue, you may have to move out of there, you know, out of the job. You may need to seek an HR person like myself to help you, you know, guide you in the right direction. Because you got to know the difference between bullying is if there's discrimination, that's a whole different ballgame, and that is illegal in the workplace. But getting back to family, it will make them mad. And it would take sometimes months until, you know, one of the family members would come around, and the one won't even speak to me or have anything to do with me. And it's sad, but the truth is, I'd rather have that piece of a family member not communicating with me than to be disrespected and treated badly, especially when I've been there for them all these years. And I've been a caregiver for over 7 years to our 85-year-old mom. But yet, you know, sometimes you don't know. I mean, perhaps they have some mental health issues. You know, it's not our job to fix family. It's not our job to enable them. It's not our job to fix the bad bosses, the bad CEOs, the bad directors. We can do our best to work with these people, communicate with them. But when it comes down to it, ultimately, the most important person in your life is yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself and you burn out dealing with toxicity, fighting every little battle and fight that your family may bring forth, or even let's go back to the nursing home, pick your battles wisely. I mean, okay, so you see, I'm making this up, food that's mashed into their bed sheets, and it looks like it's been there a couple of days. All you do is just address the CNA, whoever's the CNA that day, or address the nurse, because the nurse, the RN's going to, you know, more than likely have the CNA. And sometimes they jump in too and help. They'll have them clean it, change it. There's no need to get in a fight over that. you know, when you want to really speak up in a nursing home is when something becomes very dangerous to your loved one. I know I walked in a nursing home, I won't say which one, and I was tripping over equipment. And I thought, my God, how can they get away with this? You know, if I fall, or let's say